August is Make a Will Month, and if TPR has made a difference in your life, consider making it part of your legacy. Visit tpr.org/legacy to learn how easy it can be to include Texas Public Radio in your estate plans.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. It's said that whiskey is for drinking and water is for fighting. Right now, there's a fight over water delivery from Mexico related to a water treaty signed 81 years ago. The 1944 water treaty requires the U.S. to deliver 1.5 million acre feet of water from the Colorado River to Mexico every year, and requires Mexico to deliver 1.75 million acre feet of water to the U.S. every 5 years through tributaries that include the Rio Grande. That 5-year cycle ended October 25th. And Mexico is hundreds of thousands of gallons in arrears. But reservoirs that store that water are at record lows. The region is in drought. Farmers, ranchers, and industry in the Rio Grande Valley have felt the impact. President Trump has threatened tariffs, and U.S. lawmakers are looking for ways to sanction Mexico to give up the water it owes. Mexican officials say Mexico cannot give what it does not have. Border native Vianey Rueda, a Ph.D. candidate at the University of Michigan, is dedicating her dissertation research to the 1944 water treaty. She's written an essay, a commentary on the current water conflict called Water Does Not Know Sanctions. She explains how her experience as a border resident, a fronteriza, has influenced how she views the fight.
I grew up in El Paso, Texas, in a small city in the lower valley called San Elizario, but my family would often use the Zaragoza International Bridge to go into Ciudad Juarez and visit family in Mexico. And in crossing that bridge, you have an overlook of the river. And for as long as I can remember, the Rio Grande in that particular area has been dry. And so it's a river whose name, you know, Rio Grande, known as Rio Bravo in Mexico, implies this large body of water that was at some point untamed just because of the amount of water that it had. And so to see it reduced to a dry riverbed was something that I couldn't understand. You know, how did this happen? How did this river that is right along two countries just go dry? Having that curiosity about the environment and then seeing such a huge impact that was on the Rio Grande was sort of what led me to now take on this research on the treaty.
And it's interesting what you say that, you know, for your whole life, pretty much, you remember that riverbed being dry. And I myself being from El Paso, some people might, you know, when they think of El Paso, they think a desert. But along the Rio Grande, especially where you are from in San Elizario, it's historically been very agricultural. And so it's a lot more green along the Rio Grande. And I remember that the river, in my memory, was never really a flowing river. There was always water running through it, but it was kind of almost more creek-like with the occasional dry spells, especially when there was no water release from the New Mexico dam there, which is the Elephant Butte Dam. So people in El Paso are familiar with that water release, but coming from New Mexico, the water release that's in the conversation right now, is that affecting South Texas in the Rio Grande? And that appears to be sort of the focus of a lot of lawmakers right now who are looking to punish Mexico because it's not releasing the water that was agreed to in this particular treaty. But Vianey, you write in your commentary that that's not something that Mexico is arbitrarily doing. There is a drought in the region, and Mexico's been making some very difficult decisions. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. And you're absolutely right in that, you know, in this desert landscape, if one zooms in into the green areas, it's along the banks of the river, and it's primarily agriculture. And it's very interesting that we often think about this system as the system that is within the United States, right? The river has its headwaters in Colorado, flows down to New Mexico, ultimately reaches Texas, and then becomes the border between Texas and Mexico. And as you mentioned, there's this interesting interplay between the US states in which New Mexico delivers to Texas, and there's this notion of a release and dams and reservoirs being used, all of this infrastructure being used to abide by that release. And then there's the other element of the river that is international and the interplay between Mexico and Texas and that relationship in deliveries. And although that seems like two different systems, they're all within the same river. And so I think having that disconnect in terms of how deliveries are operated in one area versus how deliveries are operated in another is a part of the challenge and how we manage the waters of this one single river. And addressing that challenge, there's a lot of history involved, there's a lot of information. So before the 1944 water treaty between the US and Mexico was signed, there was already a series of agreements that had been signed. So in 1906, the US and Mexico signed a treaty specifically to El Paso and Ciudad Juarez, where a specific volume was going to be delivered to Mexico for agricultural purposes specifically. Then there's a signing of the Colorado River Compact in 1922 between the Colorado River states. So that excluded Mexico at that time. And then there was the 1938 Rio Grande Compact, which was a compact between the US states of Colorado, New Mexico, and Texas, which again excluded Mexico from that. So up until that point, you have all of these agreements that are establishing certain divisions and sharing of water, the construction of infrastructure in order to allow for those deliveries to happen. And so that allowed for a lot of growth, which was particularly from the agricultural sector, and also a lot of development in terms of urban areas. And this led both countries to have some concern over unilateral action in their water management. So, as the US was developing, as the US states were developing, Mexico became concerned about its access to those water resources, and vice versa, as Mexico was developing, the US also had some concern. This leads us to on the Colorado River, there was a lot of infrastructure being developed. You have these massive reservoirs and dams. So, of course, Mexico is concerned about its access to the Colorado River. On the Rio Grande, though, things were the inverse, where Texas was concerned over diversions in Mexico from those tributaries. Both of these countries really depended on that water resource for their development. And so that was the impetus for having this treaty where both countries would come to the table and talk about how they could share in these water resources that transcended their political boundaries. So ultimately, the 1944 Water Treaty actually includes three separate basins: the Tijuana River Basin, the Colorado River Basin, and the Rio Grande Basin. It's a discrepancy or something that is not agreed upon whether these basins were negotiated in tandem or whether they were negotiated separately, but ultimately within one treaty. And I think that perspective can also lead to, how we can come up with cooperative or modernizing the treaty today is how we come to think about the basins. But ultimately, on the Colorado River, the US was designated to deliver a specific volume to Mexico. On the Rio Grande, Mexico was designated to deliver a specific volume to Texas. Now, those volumes vary. These are, ultimately basins that have different carrying capacities in terms of their stream flow. They behave differently in terms of where their stream flow comes from. For example, the Colorado River is dependent on snowpack. The Rio Grande is a little bit more variable, and precipitation comes from different sources. So all of that was thought about when the treaty was being negotiated.
You know, this is a problem, I think, when rivers are international boundaries. I don't know if you have looked into, you know, when the Rio Grande was established as the border between the U.S. and Mexico, at least to divide this part of Texas from Mexico. If when they made that decision in the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo so long ago, that they thought about how water might play a part between these two countries, because water is just always going to be one of those very contentious issues, especially when you are looking at it as an international issue.
You're so correct in, you know, in thinking about what are the implications of having a river be an international boundary, given that a river often shifts. Particularly the Rio Grande is or used to be a variable river in that it experienced, like you mentioned earlier, dry spells. It was very normal for the river to have those dry spells, but also have these flooding events that could change the course of the river. And so after the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, the river was designated the new boundary between the two countries. The challenge lay in when the river shifted, it would shift ownership of those lands as well. And so the International Boundary Commission was established to try to resolve a lot of those discrepancies and a lot of that difficulty in the river. And so they actually changed the river itself in order to, I guess I could say, tame it so that the variability of the river could be decreased. And so the river itself, the flow, could be a little bit more stable. And so that included a lot of lining the river with concrete or creating dams and reservoirs that could regulate the river, the stream flow of the river. And so the physical aspect of the river was changed. But some of those discrepancies remained. And actually, in 1970, there is the boundary treaty between the two countries to settle all the outstanding disputes regarding the Rio Grande as the border. And so this is where I believe the treaty specified that the deepest channel of the river would be where the boundary lay between the two countries. And so when you have something like the border wall, for example, that is not the boundary between the two countries. It is still the river. So you often have these spaces of land that are sort of like in this no man's land between the wall and the river that is still technically U.S. territory. But as you mentioned, not only is it discrepancies in the boundary with the river, but then is the overlay of what that boundary means. And that has changed a lot in terms of a political conversation. For example, immigration is a big concern nowadays. And so there's this overlay of a immigration talk that oftentimes overshadows the water conversation and the concerns about water. And so that's another challenge that the river faces.
Vianey Rueda is a PhD candidate at the University of Michigan. Her dissertation research is on the 1944 Binational Water Treaty between the U.S. and Mexico. When we come back, the conflict over water extends far beyond the Texas-Mexico border.
And so how countries decide to address these water challenges will determine a lot of the water access, water affordability for people in those basins.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Support for this podcast of Fronteras comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The failure of Mexico to deliver water to the U.S. under the 1944 Binational Water Treaty has impacted the agricultural industry in South Texas. Here's Republican Congresswoman Monica de la Cruz speaking after the closure of the last sugar mill in Texas in 2024.
Mexico's breach has not just jeopardized our agricultural heritage and the livelihood of over 500 workers, it also threatens our region's economy and national food security.
Just this month, Senators Ted Cruz and John Cornyn introduced a bill that would punish Mexico by withholding U.S. water deliveries to Mexico that are guaranteed under the 1944 agreement. President Trump has also threatened tariffs against Mexico in the escalating dispute. Vianey Rueda, a Ph.D. candidate and native of the border, has written a commentary that argues that the Trump administration is taking a too aggressive approach to the water crisis. Rueda says prolonged drought and chronic overuse of water at the border does not recognize political pressure. She says retaliation against Mexico is contradictory to the cooperation that's needed to safeguard the livelihoods of the millions who depend on the Rio Grande on both sides of the border.
Narratives are very important, and which narratives we decide to focus on or elevate as the important narrative is going to be, I think, what defines our capacity to cooperate in the future. And so you're correct in that currently the national level or federal level narrative is one of antagonism, competition, punishing for noncompliance. And even that is a very limited understanding of the treaty and of the river. And so I think what it's going to take is changing that narrative. And we don't have to make up a narrative. We need only look at the local narrative that is unfolding in the basin. So you and I are from El Paso. We understand that the borderlands are a region that is distinct to the two countries, right? It's sort of this third country that lies in between them. And there's a lot of cultural ties, economic ties, familial ties that unite the two countries despite the division that we often hear about in the news. And that is a component that helps a lot when we're thinking about water sharing across the border, is that people that live in the borderlands, people that live within the Rio Grande Basin, have a level of solidarity between them. There is unity. There is cooperation that is already happening. Don't get me wrong. There is very much a recognition that the current state of water consumption in the region is unsustainable. There is a recognition that perhaps the management and the growth on both sides of the border needs to change in order to be within the carrying capacity of the river. There needs to be a greater commitment to abide by agreements that have been established in the past, but also recognizing that those need to be modernized to fit the current context. I attended the Rio Grande, Rio Bravo Binational River Symposium that was hosted by the Texas Water Foundation. And very much the conversation was about how do we within the basin face this challenge and create opportunities to raise up to that challenge. And so there, again, it's the solidarity that is happening within the basin. So it's changing from focusing on an antagonistic narrative at the federal level or even the state level and looking at local opportunities for cooperation and solidarity that are already happening.
You know, there may be people listening who are thinking, well, you know, I have no interests on the South Texas border. I don't have farming or ranching in my heritage. You know what? Why should this conflict that's happening right now around this water treaty and between the two nations, why should it concern people who have no interests on the border? How is it going to affect them?
Right. And I think there's no single direct answer as to how that could happen. But ultimately, the water issues of the arid Southwest or even the South between the boundary between Texas and Mexico, those are not just the issues of those specific geographic areas, right? These are issues that are propagating across the North American landscape, if we want to take a continental lens. all basins, all transboundary basins around the world are facing this challenge of being shared beyond political boundaries. Many of them are having concerns of having these formal agreements that are outdated and need to be modernized to the current challenges. And about 50% of the world's population live within these basins. And so how countries decide to address these water challenges will determine a lot of the water access, water affordability for people in those basins. For people in the United States specifically, like I mentioned, the issues of the Rio Grande are similar to the issues of the Colorado River Basin. But at the same time, even a region like the U.S.-Canada Great Lakes are also facing concerns about how they share this important water resource. And what may tie seemingly distant geographic regions like the Rio Grande Basin and the Great Lakes is the movement of people and the movement of food. So as changes in climate, as changes in water affordability and access impact people, there is the capacity for mass migration to climate havens, water havens. So that might mean that a lot of people in the arid Southwest or in Texas start shifting north towards those points where water is abundant. And even those water abundant regions might need to start thinking about how they can absorb that amount of people. Also, our food systems are tied. The Rio Grande Valley in Texas is an important source of winter vegetables and even citrus products. If that breaks down, which is already happening, a lot of, you know, agricultural farmers are having to sell a portion of their land, and so they're growing less, then that impacts the food system for the United States as a whole. In the similar way that California production being altered impacts food access in other areas. And so the connectivity of our water systems, the movement of people, and even food is why these matter, even if they're geographically distant.
And even sort of on a narrower focus, there are entire communities on the border whose reliance on the water in the river, it's what their lives are tied to. Communities like Laredo, the river is their only source of drinking water. So you're looking at communities like Laredo and even in Corpus Christi, which isn't necessarily on the border, they need to find alternative water sources. I know in El Paso, there's a desalination plant and communities are looking to do that as well. But again, these issues of water on the border, it is life and death in many instances.
You're totally right. It's the not having access to alternative water resources or the lack of planification for those alternative water resources that also presents a challenge to urban, agricultural, and even the industrial sector. This became a part of the conversation under former U.S. IBWC Commissioner Maria Elena Giner in stating that the Rio Grande is but one source of water in the borderlands. There are, of course, aquifers and groundwater that we also need to think about in terms of their sustainable management. There are alternative sources like seawater desalination, treated wastewater, and those all need to become a part of the conversation about how we bring water sustainability into the basin. So you're totally correct in thinking about alternative water resources.
So going back to the treaty and to the commentary that you have written, I'm wondering if you were able to, you know, sort of wave your magic wand and supply a solution for this issue, this controversy, this conflict that's happening right now with the 1944 International Water Treaty. What would you recommend that each country might try to do? And if you had the power to do that, what would you do?
Wow, that's a very good question. I'm going to try to think of an answer that is encapsulating a lot of the issues, because again, this issue can be fragmented into a lot of smaller pieces that can each have a different solution. So I think One, specifically for the Rio Grande Basin, is sharing in the drought conditions, sharing in the impacts of decreased stream flow. And what I mean by that is that on the Colorado River, the two countries were able to negotiate amendments to the treaty, known as minutes. And these minutes recognized that the Colorado River had changed in terms of its carrying capacity and the demand level of demand versus supply. And so they instituted a drought contingency plan between the two countries, and they agreed that the deliveries that the U.S. would make to Mexico could be proportionally reduced according to the levels of Lake Mead. Now, proportional reductions were already recognized under the treaty. That is something that the U.S. could do. But what was different is tying them to the levels of Lake Mead, tying them to the healthy or unhealthy levels of Lake Mead, allowing that to be the basis for how the two countries could share in that burden. On the Rio Grande, we haven't seen a similar level of recognition. And I think part of the problem is we use the term drought, right? And drought implies a start and an end to dry conditions, when perhaps the conversation needs to start being around aridification, which is the permanent state of dryness in a region. And so under aridification, then both countries need to share in that burden. And so if I could think about one solution, it would be in having the two countries agree to share in that burden and to institute a way in which Mexico could also proportionally reduce deliveries to Texas, with the notion that those don't have to be repaid at some point in the future, which is how the system operates today. And along with that, then you, of course, need to have the funding needed for alternative water resources that we need to cover the deficit that would be implied from having less Rio Grande water.
Are there any final words that you'd like to say, anything that I didn't get a chance to talk to you about during this conversation that you did want to bring up before we wrap things up?
Yeah, I would say that we're in a moment in time in which, while the pie is getting smaller, we need more slices. And so it's this problem of needing more of a resource but having less of it. And that can take us into thinking about, we're in greater competition. How much you take is going to mean how much less I will have. But we need to shift our focus in thinking about, how can we grow this pie? And I don't mean grow it in the sense of having more of it, but how can we be more efficient in how we're currently using it? How can we think about other resources that we can include and we can share them? We can cooperate. So I think continuing to think about cooperation over competition and thinking about people living within the same basin rather than thinking about living in different countries, I think that can start taking us down a path where we all realize that we're all impacted by the same conditions. And I continue to say we, being from El Paso, I consider this still very much to be a basin in which my quality of life will be impacted by the quality of the basin itself.
Vianey Rueda is a PhD candidate at the University of Michigan and a native of the El Paso-Juarez border region. Her dissertation on the 1944 Binational Water Treaty between the U.S. and Mexico has led her to write a commentary in English and Spanish titled Drought Does Not Know Sanctions. You can find a link to it at tpr.org. You've been listening to Fronteras. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. Chiranga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.